Hi, everyone, and welcome to the third episode of Season 4 of Studio 1.0. We had a big day in LA after we shot Sean Parker's show. If you missed my chat with the Napster co-founder and Facebook founding president, check out last week's show. After leaving Parker's mansion, we went straight to the headquarters of Showtime Networks. I've been binge-watching a lot of Showtime lately. Homeland, The Affair, and Billions are some of my favorites. And we got to talk to the programming genius who greenlit all of it. He's backed some of TV's biggest hits like 24, ER, Arrested Development. Then in 2010, he joined Showtime and has led the network's resurgence in original shows with Homeland, The Affair, Billions, Masters of Sex, Dexter, and so much more. Now he's taking over the top job, replacing longtime chairman and CEO Matthew Blank. Joining me on this edition of Studio 1.0, Showtime's new CEO, David Nevins.
David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
It's great to have you.
Thank you for coming. You came here.
Yes. So, Billions. What was it about this show that made you think this can be a hit?
It's a world, first of all, that has been explored a little bit in the movies, but not explored so much on television. What's interesting about the show is I think it touches on all of our feelings about wealth and class, which is kind of a hard subject to touch in America. And so I think it's very much, you know, sort of in the zeitgeist and deals with all of our complicated issues about the super wealthy.
Now, you launched Homeland, The Affair, Masters of Sex. When it comes to spotting a hit, is it all art or is there any science?
There's not a ton of science. You know, first of all, it's some combination of who are you betting on? So it's about it's instincts about people, it's instincts about the creators, instincts about the actors who are going to be able to grow and create a role. You know, good writing is the core of it all. And, you know, it's the good script that gets the good actor, that gets the good director, that makes for a compelling show. And it's some sense of, like, having some feel for where the culture is right now, what people are going to sit up and take notice with, which is, it's ever sort of changing.
Is it like a gut thing? I mean, have there been times where people told you, no, it's not gonna take
off? There's some degree
of
gut. We don't really do testing in any real way.
Really?
And
that's kind of scary.
You know,
I mean, it's like you're taking a huge risk.
Focus group something with, but it's 80 people in Van Nuys. There's nothing scientific about it. I like to actually watch our pilots in different groups of people over and over, and I can start to feel. I learned that from, I work with Ron Howard, and Ron would always watch his movie with bunches of different people. And I remember the first time he showed it to me, and I tried to be polite and say, oh, that was great. And he would not let me get away with just, that's great. He wanted to really know what I thought, where I thought it lagged, where I thought, you know, things were confusing. And so you do this over time, you develop a feel for it.
You've recently taken over for Matt Blank,
yep.
Who was in this seat for like two decades.
Not this very seat, but figuratively this
but
seat, yes.
He had this job
yes,
longer than any other executive in television has had a job ever.
Yeah.
And now you're on the business side of things.
This is the rare orderly transition in this business where it's been sort of carefully planned. Over the course of the last 2 years, Matt has been really the architect of it, and he's been great about it. He's now the chairman. Yeah, I kind of came up through the creative side. I find the business side very motivating. To sort of become CEO at this moment when the business is in such intense flux is a really exciting time to do it because we're now selling ourselves over the internet. There's a whole new way. We now have a direct relationship with our customers. And television has sort of finally reached the top of the totem pole in terms of its place in the sort of cultural, you know, hierarchy.
Is this the golden age of TV?
I think so. I mean, it's an overused term, but I mean, how can you say it's not? Movies are no longer on a higher pedestal. And television gets now the highbrow conversation, the highbrow criticism and critiquing that you just couldn't do when it was Simon and Matlock.
You and Matt Blank have steered Showtime to near parity with HBO. What distinguishes Showtime from HBO? What distinguishes Showtime from Netflix? What is the Showtime brand?
Well, we're all doing very similar things. And, you know, for better or for worse, the sort of premium high-end areas where everyone wants to go. So what distinguishes a Showtime show? I want it to be culturally relevant. You know, Homeland has things to say about America's place in a, you know, 21st century world. Even Masters of Sex, a period show, has, I think, a lot to say about gender and our kind of complicated relationship with sexuality. So cultural relevance, entertainment value, characters with some complicated adult psychology.
Some would say you've got all of these hit shows, but you haven't had your major, major hit. What's going to be your Game of Thrones?
I don't think you can ever plan for the, like, you know, what the big hit is. I did not know what Homeland was going to be. We're delivering consistent shows that people want to watch across the year, probably better than anyone right now. Mm-hmm. But I would love to have a Game of Thrones.
Does it keep you up at night? Is that like your white whale? You're like, I need my Game of Thrones. Like,
no.
I'm chasing this major hit.
We've got a lot of shows that are working, so, you know, and I'm trying to figure out how to sort of make each one 10% bigger than it is right now. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what keeps me up.
How do you view something like HBO? Are they like your nemesis? Do you think of them
no,
as
the... No, the world is much bigger than Showtime and HBO right now. There's FX, there's Netflix, there's Amazon, there's Hulu is launching shows now, and there's AMC, and then there's, you know, a million people are trying to get into that game. Generally, what's good for HBO is good for Showtime.
What's Showtime's biggest threat?
It's a complicated 21st century media world. There's a lot of people clamoring for attention, and we got to stay at the top of the list, and we got to continue putting out shows that feel like they have risk to them, but that are going to make people pay attention. Even within the traditional universe, you know, we're still only in 23, 24 million homes through the traditional way. That means there's, you know, almost three quarters of the homes in America don't have Showtime. So mm-hmm. we have a lot of running room. Mm-hmm. It's like a moment of great opportunity.
How disruptive has Netflix been to your business?
They have seemingly unlimited amounts of money to throw towards programming. That's a challenge to compete with.
They buy
our programming, so they're a customer, and they buy our programming internationally. It's a complicated relationship.
Have you ever considered, you know, throwing all the episodes out there at once like they do?
I have thought about it, but I think there's great value in having the conversation sustained over the course of a couple months, 2 or 3 months. So I think the world is sort of going to come back to a little more measured. Although I'll do different shows in different ways, you know. When we put Twin Peaks out, maybe it'll be fun to have not just do one a week, but to do it in a different way. I mean, who knows? Something I'll talk about with David Lynch. But there's all sorts of possibilities. But the idea of just throwing it out, you know, having a week of buzz, 2 weeks of buzz, and then having it die down, I don't think that makes sense for us.
So how many people are paying for Showtime, the streaming service, today?
I'll tell you, it's grown pretty much every week since we've launched. It's, you know, well more than doubled since Homeland, and it's gone up again with Billions.
How many more seasons does Homeland have left in it?
Well, the great thing about Homeland is it reboots itself every year, that it's a new story in a new place. Its changeability, I think, works really well. So I don't feel like we're at, you know, I don't know exactly, but my guess is three.
Three more seasons of Homeland.
It's really, you know, star and creator, Alex Gonza and Claire Danes, and they will make a decision when Claire is sick of doing the show, sick of playing that character, when Alex is sick of writing that show. Because, I mean, do you think the story of America's complicated place in the 21st century won't be relevant, you know, in 2015, in 2019, in 2022? Of course, it's still going to be relevant. And then it's just a question of creativity, how long we keep going.
What's it been like working with David Lynch on Twin Peaks?
Once we got the deal done and got started, he's actually an incredibly efficient director, and he's now more than halfway through. He's kind of a genius. So watching him work, I've been down to the set a couple times. The crew is largely people he's worked with for the last, you know, through his entire career. The actors, I'm not allowed to say who they are, but many of them have worked with him their entire careers. So it is really watching a maestro, and I'm incredibly excited. I think it's going to be a work of, you know, dare I say, genius. I don't use that word lightly.
A work of genius.
So I'm, you know, I should, again, knock on wood, but I feel like it's gonna be a really special television.
There are more scripted TV shows than ever before. There are also more canceled TV shows than ever before. Are we in a TV bubble?
I don't really think so. A bubble implies that there's suddenly gonna be a puncture and we're gonna be down 25% in the number of shows and the quality. I definitely do not see that. It's possible to not succeed. You know, Microsoft, Yahoo, they went in and they went out and they decided, you know what, after a certain amount of investment, we don't have the stomach for it, it's not for us. There's gonna be other people that exit the business and there's shows that can fail. That said, it's robust. The demand is there, the desire is there. We are in expansion mode, and I continue, you know. I don't feel like we have too much. Ask a Showtime subscriber. They wouldn't say we have too much. They'd say, like, give me another great show.
Is it almost scary that anyone, even Amazon, can make a hit original show?
Anybody can make an original show. Whether it's a hit or not, we don't know until we like know actually how many people are watching.
Like Transparent, for example, which we don't know how many people are watching, but if you consider like
it's a terrific show. I will say that, yes. I personally really love Transparent. So it's scary. I think it's democratizing. I think it's good. I think it's good for the creative process. It's good for the business that I'm in, you know, it keeps us on our toes, means we have to compete harder, better, to make this a creative home for creative people. Would I like to keep out the competition? I don't really have that instinct. I don't really look at the world that way. Like, we're in the club, so we're gonna shut the door behind us. No one else can come in this club. I don't think that's good for storytelling, good for creativity, good for the consumer. It's not. I mean, that's not how the world works.
What are your plans for international expansion? I know you made a deal with Bell in Canada. You just licensed your shows to Sky. Do you want to sell Showtime streaming services in other countries?
We have finally, it's been a big push that we've been making, that I've been making. I think we have more shows that work in UK and France compared to some of our competition. We made a big push for starting in Canada, starting in the English-speaking international territories. Then we did UK, Sky buys for UK, Germany, Italy. We just did Stan in Australia. There's probably more to come in continental Europe. Mm-hmm. And the Showtime brand is starting to mean something. So they're interested in buying, rather than selling our shows in a one-off way, you know, Billions is over here, Dexter was over there, and Ray Donovan is over here at this network. Put them all together, the same networks, and it makes a big difference. I mean, it's a factor of 5 and 10 times what we've been making in some of these countries.
So, you know, what about plans to sell the streaming service independently
in other countries? We haven't done it yet. We can. There's such interest in premium programming right now that we made the decision in the big territories to sell. But, you know, we'll see what happens when these deals are done.
What about China? I mean, this is a question that Netflix is being asked all the time.
Go figure. I think Billions has real potential in China. We are, there's interest in the subject matter, where there are conversations going on, and I'm hopeful that Billions gets a real deal in China that is potentially our biggest deal ever for China. But China is becoming a very real market for us. And it, you know, as recently as when we were selling Ray Donovan, we're selling Ray Donovan in China for pennies. Now there's real interest, and Billions is the first major sale that we've made in China, and it's significant.
Can you win the world without China? Can Netflix dominate without China?
Here's how I think about China. China has always been a terrible market for American television. The piracy is so rampant that, you know, the movie studios figured out how to do some stuff in China maybe, what, 5 years ago, where they first started making real money. Now they're making real money. I expect there to be a lot of growth there in the next 5 years. And I think we spend a lot of time talking about China now.
How did you get to Hollywood?
I just drove here.
Volkswagen Beetle?
No, in an Oldsmobile. Yes, my grandmother's Oldsmobile. I came out very soon after college, and it was actually when I was in Scotland. I spent a year in Glasgow, and I fell in with a bunch of really hardcore like film geeks who would have given their right arm to move to Hollywood. And I realized I have no immigration problems. I'm not Scottish. I'm American. I got an American passport. I don't need a visa to get to Hollywood. I can just drive there, and I did. I wanted to be in the movie business. Still haven't made it on television. It worked out well. Television in the sort of the turn between the 80s and 90s. That was not the golden age of television. Now there's no place I'd rather be.
You worked your way up. You worked at Imagine, as you said, with Ron Howard. You worked at NBC. You worked at Fox. I'm curious about network television in particular, because since Parenthood ended, and I know you were behind Parenthood,
yep.
Friday Night Lights. I don't watch a single show on network television except for The Bachelor, which I'm embarrassed to admit, but...
Don't be embarrassed.
What? What's happened?
I love reality television, too.
Do you watch The Bachelor?
I have. I sort of fell out a few years ago.
What are your favorite reality TV shows?
MasterChef. I like Project Runway. I was watching Real Housewives for a while, but then it made me feel bad about humanity, and so I stopped.
It takes a real man to admit you're watching The Bachelor and The Real Housewives.
Yes, I'm very secure.
Thank you. And I know Showtime is owned by CBS, but what's wrong with network television?
Network television still gets big audiences, but I think it was harder to hide 5 or 7 years ago, before cable was really developed and before particularly pay cable and sort of, there was such a volume of premium shows. You can now satisfy yourself living over here with, Mad Men and Homeland and Billions and Silicon Valley. You don't have to leave that neighborhood. But there's a lot of people who are very satisfied in the neighborhood that is, Big Bang Theory and Chicago Fire and Black-ish, and there's interesting stuff. And I feel like the networks are starting to innovate more out of necessity.
But should the cable companies be worried?
They're under pressure to innovate. They're under pressure to, change the way that people the way that they make their signal available and the way that people are able to watch them. And they also, by the way, are the people who are the main pipe to the house that are serving broadband. So that's what's, that's where their growth is coming from right now.
What about ESPN?
ESPN is suffering, right now from the law of big numbers. And they're still an incredibly healthy cash machine, and they're just trying to, recalibrate their growth.
What about Apple? What do you think is Apple's future in television?
I don't know. If you'd asked me, a year ago or 9 months ago, I would have thought that they would be, have tried to figure out their own version of a bundle by now, and, a lot of people are rooting for them. So,
what happened?
They're incredibly...
Why didn't it work out?
I think it was challenging to put the pieces together with, the content owners. There were a lot of conversations going on, how and when, I can't comment on. Apple's an incredibly innovative company. They make incredibly delectable products that people want, and I think they have enormous potential to crack the television world.
I mean, in TV, could they just end up being just the set-top box?
I think that's possible. Yeah, and they could also be a TV, or they can be a component inside the TV, or a box next to the TV. There's a lot of different ways, but
Have you heard
about it? The fight over the living room has not been decided yet. You know, who controls the living room and who controls the house, I don't think has been decided yet. And TV is clearly a huge part of who controls the living room, who controls the electronics of a house.
And what about the entertainment industry in general? Where is the entertainment industry in 5 years? What are we watching? How are we watching it?
Well, I think you're going to continue to see the blurring between movies and television. You're going to see television shows, stuff produced primarily for television, that's going to play in theaters for occasionally an out-of-home collective experience. I'm already feeling interest. People are coming to us. You want to premiere this? You want to show 4 episodes? I guarantee you when we put Twin Peaks out, people are going to want to put that in theaters. Mm-hmm. And so I see those lines blurring, but fundamentally the movement is for bigger and bigger screens mm-hmm. in your home and consumption at home, and that has been television's great strength. So, but the desire for great complicated storytelling, people's narrative ability to process complicated narratives is only growing exponentially. So shows are getting more and more complicated, more and more sophisticated. It rewards good writing and good acting, and I expect that to only increase in the next 5 years.
David Nevins, CEO of Showtime Networks.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
And for admitting that you watch The Bachelor.
It was never my favorite.
Next week on Studio 1.0, my guest is Padmasree Warrior, the new U.S. CEO for Next EV, an electric car startup, and one of the most powerful women in Silicon Valley. Be sure to subscribe to the Studio 1.0 podcast for the entire show library and follow me on Twitter at Emily Chang TV.